From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Trump on Saturday gave the longest speech of his presidency at the Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC. During a rambling two-hour address filled with lies and rants, Trump took aim at all his perceived enemies, including Special Counsel Robert Mueller, Democratic Party presidential contenders, and some former members of his own cabinet. Some parts of his speech simply made no sense. He slammed Attorney General Jeff Sessions for having recused himself from overseeing the Russia investigation, implying directly that he wanted Sessions to squash the probe. Elsewhere on the East Coast, at about the same time, Senator Bernie Sanders was giving his first campaign speech. Sanders spoke to a massive outdoor crowd of supporters in Brooklyn, New York, just a few miles from where he had grown up. We turn to Arun Gupta now to take a look at both these speeches. Arun is an investigative journalist who's written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, Salon, Raw Story, and The Intercept. He also is the author of the forthcoming book, Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction, and he's a regular news correspondent on our program. Welcome back, Arun.
Great to be with you today, Sonali.
Let's first talk about Trump. Some of the excerpts of his speech that I watched were incomprehensible, and in a few minutes I'll play the one that was my favorite. But he just was the sort of freewheeling Trump, and he made a point of the fact that he was off script, saying that this was a reason that he was elected. To the rest of us, it looked like the most bizarre political theater. But didn't his supporters kind of lap it up?
Yeah, and I think that's really the key point to remember here, that who allows Trump to exist, who enables Trump, and people were just going wild. I saw some of this during the 2016 campaign. I went to six different Donald Trump campaign events, saw him speak numerous times, and what it is, you know, we have to understand the mass psychology at play here, and there's this pleasure that people get out of Donald Trump. The first campaign rally I went to was in the spring of 2016. So this is like 6-7 months before the general election. And some Republicans were kind of like dazed at the fact that he was a nominee. But already then I was hearing from people who are saying that they found Trump exciting, that he's going to kick over the apple cart, that he's going to blow up the system. And this is something very real, and this is what Trump is appealing to. It's basically this libidinal energy, almost this sexual energy. You know, I really think, and you know, without getting too Freudian, that there is this kind of like sexual energy that people derive, and that's why you saw this wild cheering. And I'm thinking as I'm listening to the speech that it's just like, in a way, it reminds me a little of black churches in terms of the call and response, except this is the white nationalist call and response between Trump and his base.
Okay, let's take a listen to one clip from the speech. This is my favorite one. This is one of the several places where what he said made almost no sense and just came out as a sort of bizarre word salad. Here is Trump on Saturday at the CPAC conference.
You know, a great friend of mine from New York, he's a stone cold killer. He's a brutal man. He's actually not even a good friend of mine because he'd turn on me in 2 seconds if it was a problem. But he's a very rich guy. And he said, what are you going to speak about today? Like, what are you going to speak? I said, I don't know. He said, I just heard that you have the biggest crowd in the history of CPAC. They're all over. By the way, not only this giant room, they're in many hotel rooms all over the place. You're just better at real estate than they are.
And that is one of several parts of Trump's speech on Saturday that made almost no sense. Arun, I don't know if you'd seen this one before, but he talked about one of his good friends who was a stone-cold killer, a brutal man. Oh, but then he wasn't a friend. He would turn on him and then never made reference to that man again and pivoted to the crowd size at the conference and at his inauguration. He made literally no sense there. I mean, he's talking about a Stone Cold killer as a friend.
Well, I think that we shouldn't focus on the facts too much. It really is about this will to power. You know what? So now we know Michael Cohen in his testimony last week confirmed what everyone already pretty much knew, that Trump never expected to win, that his campaign was the greatest political infomercial in world history. And then he did win. And so he did it by blowing up the establishments of both the Democratic and Republican parties, by making the foreign, putting egg on everyone's face, the foreign policy establishment, the intellectuals, the liberal media, academics, the left. You know, no one saw this coming, and he didn't even see it coming clearly. And so, but once he does it, it becomes proof of his own greatness, of his own will to power, his own ability to create this destiny. And this is what people are lapping up. You know, it's after the 2008 financial crisis, I was telling people the theorist to read was Karl Marx. After the 2016 campaign, the theorist to read was Sigmund Freud. And this is, you know, very Freudian, this kind of like phallic power. It's male, it's aggressive masculinity that we very much saw on display with the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. And, you know, we have to understand that there is this kind of like consumer society creates this deep dissatisfaction, right? Because the vast majority of people's lives are utterly banal. You wake up, you go to work, you come home, you order food, you watch Netflix on the weekends, you consume, you go shopping, you see a sports game. It's banal society. And we want something more exciting. And this exists on both the left and the right. The difference with the left is what is exciting is much more about being liberatory, about justice. But that is why Occupy Wall Street really appealed to so many people. I saw this across the country when I covered it in 2011, 2012, visiting more than 40 occupations, that people were excited about the ability to seize their own destiny. And so, you know, we can sit back and we can ridicule Trump and say he's dumb, you know, that he makes no sense, but that misses what he is about. And the crowd is just going wild. That's what I think is key here. It's not so much what Trump is saying, it's how the crowd is reacting. And I think it's fair to say, like, this is like a mini Nuremberg rally. You know, it has these, like, you know, it's this just odor of fascism and demagoguery. But this is what the Republican Party is really becoming, this just full embrace of white nationalism. And it's also patriarchal white nationalism. I believe that you and I talked about this in 2016, that we can't understand Trump just as in racial terms. We also have to understand it in gender terms, this like aggressive male sexual power and violence. And that is what I think we really saw on display.
Let's play one more excerpt from his speech where he ridicules the Green New Deal and, of course, makes up wholesale lies about it. Here is Trump again.
No planes. No energy. When the wind stops blowing, that's the end of your electric. Let's hurry up. Darling. Darling, is the wind blowing today? I'd like to watch television, darling.
And that's Trump at the CPAC conference on Saturday, basically saying that the Green New Deal will mean there will be no planes and that if you want to watch TV, it will depend on whether the wind's blowing in that moment. And of course, the crowd lapped it up again. He was compared to a skilled stand-up comedian. And it doesn't matter, does it, Arun, that he's essentially making it up as he goes along, that nothing he said about the Green New Deal was actually based in any fact or reality?
Yes, that's very true. But let's go deeper, I think. So look at the way that the right is attacking the Green New Deal. I mean, it's we can, again, in Freudian terms, it's all about the phallus, that AOC is all about taking away power. You know, it's we're going to take away your airplane. Sebastian Gorka said we're going to take away, they're going to take away your hamburgers, or that you can't reproduce, right? This whole lie that AOC is saying, like, you can't have children, or that, you know, we're going to take away your TV, your pleasure, right? So it's all about this kind of like castration complex. And that's why we have to go beyond the specific facts to understand what Trump is really trying to appeal to. And this is why the crowd goes wild, even if they don't know it about, even if they don't understand quite what it's about. It's that the Democrats are this like weak, enervating, like feminizing force, and he is the strong male masculine father figure who's going to restore virility, restore potency after America has been castrated.
And so for those of us who watched parts of that two-hour speech, the longest of his presidency, unless you think of it in the terms that you just put, the poll results from the latest NBC Wall Street Journal poll make no sense. So this brand new poll showing that a full 40% of registered voters would today vote for Trump again to take office. Not very different from the numbers Obama had at this time. Obama, I believe it was 45% at this point in his career, said that they would vote to reelect him. Clinton was even lower, Bill Clinton, at 38%. Both, of course, Clinton and Obama won re-election, which is absolutely frightening to think that we could have another 4 years of this person in the White House. And for most of the rest of Americans, it doesn't compute that he could make the speech at CPAC as just one illustration of the crazy that we see coming from the White House and still retain so much support among so many Americans.
Yeah, I would just, I think we need to change the narrative. He may seem crazy to us, but I think we need to understand the mass psychology at root here, because otherwise we're not going to understand why 40% of Americans still support him after everything, despite kidnapping children, despite killing children, despite his embrace of white nationalists after Charlottesville, his embrace of dictators who butcher and chop apart journalists, and, you know, despite larding just massive tax cuts on the rich and really screwing over his own supporters, he still has this huge base of support, and that's frightening. But it also, people need to like think about, how do you reach those who can be reached? There are all sorts of different Trump voters. You know, I estimate 10 to 15% are absolute fanatics, that they would willingly follow him into a global thermonuclear holocaust. But a lot of them are instrumentalist. You know, they may be happy about something, about the tax cuts. They may think that the economy is doing well, and that's because of him.
Or he'll outlaw abortion or something else.
Right. Those are the ones who need to be figure out how to peeled off, and they have to be peeled off in a way that, you know, fundamentally gets at their needs. And I think that, in a way, what is what I've seen Bernie Sanders represent more than any other Democratic presidential candidate thus far.
So let's talk about Sanders. That's a good segue. At about the same time that Trump was ranting and raving at the CPAC conference, and by the way, he did rant and rave some more about socialism and the socialist that are going to destroy America, you had a self-described democratic socialist speaking in Brooklyn, close to where he was raised, and he spoke to a large audience. Sanders had his first official rally speech. What I thought was interesting about the speech that he gave here, Arun, and I understand you attended that speech, was that he spoke at some point, he had a sort of standard, you know, wealth inequality, but he did also refer to his own personal background and his own story with of working class roots. We haven't seen him do much of that before, have we?
Yeah, definitely. So I was in the crowd, and one of the people who introduced him was Sean King, a journalist at The Intercept, who he actually addressed that very question. He said that Bernie does not like to talk about his background. And so he was saying, like, you know, we've been telling him, Bernie, you need to talk about where you came from, you know, your political background growing up. And, you know, and that this is what's really remarkable. I think, you know, like Noam Chomsky, I think, believe has this line about, like, you know, Bernie Sanders is like one of the few politicians in the world who have integrity. And that's the thing, when you hear him speak, it is just so different than Donald Trump. I mean, Donald Trump, it's grievances, it's racism, it's, you know, this just patriarchy, this aggression. You know, it was just like, it's hilarious that he's still complaining about his inauguration crowd. You know, this shows like what a tiny, bruised, fragile ego that Trump has. But with Bernie Sanders, it just, he's talking about policy after policy, and he's talking about who has been shut out in terms of workers, in terms of immigrants, in terms of women, communities of color, and, you know, talking about a Green New Deal and Medicare for all and unions. It's all about uplifting people. And then towards the end, he did start to talk about his background. In terms of what it was like growing up in Brooklyn and the struggles that his parents had. And while he didn't talk about it, other people who introduced him did, you know, that he lost family in the Holocaust. And if his father hadn't left Poland when he was a teenager, he would have died in the Holocaust as well. And, you know, Bernie Sanders, you know, like I believe it was Sean King, who had this line about, you know, as Donald Trump and Fred Trump, his father, are discriminating against African Americans in housing, which was a subject of a Department of Justice lawsuit against the Trump organization. Bernie Sanders is getting arrested protesting housing segregation. So I don't think the differences could be any more starker, you know, that you have someone who really represents potentially the best of what America can be. And obviously this is still within the limits of a capitalist state, but he, I think, is really one of the most inspiring figures who has a mass following to exist in modern American history.
Now, Arun, you and I spoke in 2016 at the Democratic National Convention, and I remember one of our conversations was around, is the left pouring way too much of its energy into the Sanders, the then Sanders campaign? What do you know, so much has changed, of course, between 2016 and now, and more will change between 2016 and 2020. Do you think that Sanders is himself a different candidate today, and that the times are more suited to a Sanders candidacy now than they were 2 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. Here's the thing. The reason I was arguing in 2016 that the left should not pour resources into the Bernie Sanders campaign was because I was like, look, you know, it's I've been covering presidential elections for over 30 years, and it's just like, I knew the Democrats were going to rig the primary against Sanders. That's why the superdelegates existed, right? They are designed as an undemocratic force for the establishment politician. In addition, it came out towards the end of the campaign in a New York Times article that the Sanders campaign admitted that they were just running a protest campaign. And that's what I had strongly suspected, and others did all along, that they didn't think they could ever win. And so just like Trump was surprised, everyone, including the Sanders campaign, was surprised that he did so well and that he could have won. And that's the difference with 2020, is that he is running to win this time, and he's creating an organization to win the nomination and to hopefully win the general election. On top of that, what we've seen, it was a combination of him running and then the shock of Trump's victory that led to this explosive growth of the Democratic Socialists of America and kind of the organized left parties in general, right? This had been a long time coming since the financial crisis, since Occupy Wall Street, since the new social movements of the last decade, like Dreamers, Black Lives Matter, climate justice movement, trans visibility. We've seen all these new movements come into being, but now there's also a defined ideology, and of course the low-wage workers movement, like Fight for 15, the $15 an hour campaigns, and it's kind of consolidated to a large degree, not fully, because there is a lot of friction between class and various aspects of identity politics, but it has consolidated in this kind of like broad socialist left movement. And so I think there is potential for the left to genuinely grow into a mass force for the first time really since the late 60s or even the 1930s, when the left was, you know, the radical left really was a central part of American society and culture, literature, the arts, Hollywood, where it represented a significant part of the mainstream, where we're at the beginning of this period. But I think if the left is smart and strategic, it can use Sanders' campaign to grow while also further opening the space for socialist ideas and potentially even bringing a democratic socialist to power with all the contradictions and problems that would entail.
Very, very briefly, we just have a few seconds left, but Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton are both names that keep coming up. And it just there's also some sense that Joe Biden is the only person who might be more popular than Bernie Sanders. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's this really bizarre and hypocritical identity politics. The same exact people who attack Bernie Sanders as being too male and too stale want to nominate Joe Biden, a lot of them, who is 1 year younger than Bernie Sanders. And obviously, he's an old white man, but because they think that he can appeal to racist white males in the Midwest, among the Midwest working class that went to Trump and abandoned Hillary Clinton because she didn't bother to campaign there. Of course, what they fail to recognize is a lot of these white male workers support Bernie Sanders, and I've interviewed plenty of them, for his policies, not this bizarre identity politics that Joe Biden is this kind of like a good old boy who's a buffoon who's going to appeal to them. Rather, you can appeal to them out of politics, not out of identity. And so it's just a really bizarre approach, because they fear Bernie Sanders because he would blow apart the neoliberal consensus that has dominated the party going back over 30 years with the rise of the Clintons.
Well, Arun, I want to thank you, as always, for joining us today and sharing your insight. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Arun Gupta is an investigative journalist. He's written for dozens of publications. He's also the author of the forthcoming book, Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction. And he's a regular news correspondent for our program. We've been discussing Trump's CPAC speech and Bernie Sanders' first campaign rally speech. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.